Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
Now, straight from the headlines, we bring you the latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at the San Diego Performance Academy. My guest today is State Senator Marty Block from the 39th District. He's served in the legislature since 2008, and he previously served on the County Board of Education. He's also the past president of both the California County Boards of Education and the Community College District Board of Trustees. His career as an educator included 26 years at San Diego State University, where he served as a dean, a professor, and a legal advisor. He received the university's Distinguished Service Award and served as founding chair of the National Higher Education Law and Policy Institute. He's also an attorney. Marty holds a Juris Doctorate degree as well as bachelor's degrees in education and political science. He's passionate about education issues, and he currently chairs the State Senate's Budget Subcommittee on Education and sits on the Senate Education Committee. Today, Senator Block is here to talk about efforts to improve educational opportunities in our region, as well as his new bills to combat human trafficking and protect seniors in residential care facilities. Marty, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, Miriam. It's great to be here with you.
I'd like to start by talking about Senate Bill 850, which you've introduced, and I understand that that is going to give community colleges the opportunity to offer some four-year degrees, limited degrees called applied baccalaureates. Tell us what motivated that bill.
Well, a couple of things. First of all, President Obama last year in his State of the Union address talked about a huge skills gap we have in this country. While we have unemployment, there are jobs out there that go wanting because there aren't enough trained workers to fill those jobs. We have a problem here in California where it's estimated we need about 60,000 more bachelor's degrees awarded to prepare workers for jobs that are out there in the field. Here in San Diego, Qualcomm has hundreds of jobs available and just can't find local graduates to fill those jobs. So they're hiring out of state, they're hiring out of the country. My bill, it's Senate Bill 850, would allow community colleges to prepare students for a very select number of workforce-needed areas so they could move right into these jobs that are there.
Right. So I understand it would allow each community college to choose one field where they would offer this applied baccalaureate degree. Is that?
Yeah, as the bill's now offered, it's one per college. There's about an eight-month process of getting a bill through the legislature.
Would you like to see more than that?
Well, no, I think we might end up seeing fewer. We might see just a pilot program of a handful of colleges at first offering these degrees. Ultimately, yes, after the pilot, if it's successful, I would love to see community colleges have more rein in deciding what bachelor's they want to offer. But keeping true to the mission of community colleges, which is largely preparing students for transfer and for career training.
Correct. Well, that seems like it could be a really good opportunity for students out here in East County, where we have Grossmont and Cuyamaca Community College, but there is no four-year university currently in East County.
Yeah, you've got great community colleges out here, and the leadership of your colleges are very supportive of Senate Bill 850. They know there's a shortage in many workforce areas, some in the healthcare fields, some in other technical fields. And frankly, even with the four-year university, the public four-year universities don't offer many of the degrees that are needed now and will be needed in the future. Community colleges can fill that gap.
Very good. What are some of the kinds of degrees that you think they might offer, some of the fields that you think would be first down the pipeline?
Well, in healthcare, we're looking at respiratory technician, bachelor's degrees. We're looking at in automotive technology. It used to be you went to auto shop when I was in high school.
Yeah.
Now it's auto technology because
it's also high tech.
Yes, you have several computers in any given automobile. But people who manage automotive shops, don't have really training in leadership skills, in management skills they need. They get a 2-year automotive technology certificate, but a 4-year degree would afford them with the additional skills they need to run these kinds of shops. So that's a 4-year bachelor's in that area would be helpful. There are actually about 150 different bachelor's degrees offered around the country by community colleges. California doesn't allow it yet. Hopefully it will.
Interesting. How has it worked out in the other places?
We hear nothing but reports of success. Michigan last year was the 21st state to allow community colleges to offer bachelor's degrees. We'd be 22 if California passes my bill this year.
Very interesting idea. And now what is the status on the bill and what do you think the likelihood is that it's going to make it through this legislature?
Well, we're just starting out the legislative session. The bill will be going to the Senate Education Committee. Assuming it passes out of education, it will go to the Senate Appropriations Committee, then the Senate floor. Same process then in the Assembly. And finally, we'll move to the governor for signature in September. And we've gotten signals from the governor that he may like the bill. He's looking for ways to make college more affordable and to also reduce the time it takes for students to graduate. And by allowing students to get their 4-year degree the same place where they do their first 2 years, makes it much more likely they'll go ahead and finish up the bachelor's degree and do it in, do it expeditiously.
Yeah, well, it seems like a very interesting idea, and we're definitely going to be following this bill and letting our listeners know how it's progressing. Now, you also have a bill, SB 939, that is designed to help victims of human trafficking, which is, of course, a huge and growing problem here in San Diego County in our border region. I understand you have the support of the County Board of Supervisors on this one. Tell us what the bill would do.
Well, we're looking at human trafficking differently than we have in the past. We've sometimes thought of human trafficking, a lot of people think of it as prostitution. Some human trafficking is forced labor. But most really right now, and most of the victims of human trafficking are not folks from other countries, which is a conception some people have, but actually Americans and usually young girls. Just out of some of our local middle schools and junior high schools even, these young girls will go for a joyride with a gang member and end up, it's not so joyful. They end up being basically held captive by the gang and forced into prostitution.
That's really frightening. This could happen really to anyone, anyone's daughter.
It's really a scary proposition. And the gangs are looking at this now as their primary source of revenue. Whereas it used to be drugs or weapons trafficking. You know, when you sell a drug or a weapon, you can sell it once and then it's gone. With these young girls, they're selling them over and over again, 7 or 8 times a night. And it's horrifying. So right now, the district attorneys of several different counties are working together to prosecute these crimes when they catch these activities happening, when they get the gang members who are imprisoning these young girls, they're trying them. But if it often, human trafficking is a mobile activity. They'll have the girls first in, and I call them girls because they are young, they're 12, 13, 14, 15 years old. They'll have them first in San Diego, then the next weekend in Los Angeles, the next weekend in Sacramento, then maybe San Francisco. And each time they're caught, they're prosecuted for human trafficking in these separate jurisdictions, which means the girls who are the victims have to testify multiple times against the person who's been their captor.
Very stressful.
Very traumatic. And also costs the system a lot to do these multiple prosecutions. So what my bill 939 does, it allows the district attorneys of several jurisdictions to join into one case various jurisdictional criminal activity.
Now, this is part of a package of bills going after human trafficking, I understand. Is that correct?
That is correct. I have a second bill. It's SB 473. And what 473 does is now that we're acknowledging that gangs are the ones doing most of the trafficking, it allows human trafficking to be treated as a gang crime. There are now 32 crimes that qualify under what they call the STEP Act, which steps up enforcement and also steps up penalties, enhances penalties for a gang activity. Human trafficking is not one of the 32 gang crimes. My SB 473 would make it a gang crime, which the DA and the sheriff tell me would allow them to better combat human trafficking and also put folks who do this terrible stuff in prison for a greater length of time.
Seems like that would be sort of a no-brainer to me, but what kind of support and, if any, opposition is there to that measure?
It's already made it through the Senate. It's on the Assembly floor right now. There's really virtually no opposition among the members. However, it's got to get the governor's signature. And the problem with the bill is it enhances penalties for human trafficking, which means more jail time. And now that just last week, the courts have decided to give California two more years to comply with the court-ordered reduction in prison population. Because we have two more years, we think now the bill is ready to move to the governor, and we hope he will sign it.
It's a good side issue on the prison overcrowding, but what can be done in that 2 years so that 2 years from now we're not in the same situation if we're increasing penalties?
Well, I think because of the threat of action by the courts, the state legislature has now kind of gotten together, and we're going to focus a good deal of resources on cutting recidivism so that when people reenter, when they've been in prison, when they come back in society, hopefully they'll be more prepared to become useful members of society. They will not recommit, reoffend.
So things like job training maybe?
Job training, better counseling while they're in prison. Simple things like making sure that when they're released from prison, they get identification, like a driver's license back. Yeah. When they go into jail, their identification is taken away. And as of now, they don't get it back.
Maybe so, drug or alcohol rehab programs if they need it.
Various programs like you're mentioning. And a lot of mental health work as well.
Yeah. The other issue that we wanted to talk about today is helping protect our senior citizens who are in residential care facilities. And I understand you're getting ready to introduce a bill. It's going to be called appropriately SB 911. Tell us, first of all, the background about why this bill is necessary and then what it would do, Marty.
Yeah, we've got, of course, an aging population, and many of our seniors need assistance in their daily life. Some can be helped at home. Others need to go into residential care facilities. The Union Tribune, I don't often agree with the Union Tribune, but they did a very good watchdog series on care in these facilities and found that there have been 27 deaths over the last 5 to 6 years in San Diego.
These were really shocking. One of them, I believe, was an elderly gentleman who had fallen in one of these facilities and injured himself, and they found him like 2 days later dead. How can you not check on somebody for that length of time? It was absolutely scandalous.
Yeah, it's horrible. And we're all going to get there at some point.
Right.
So we need to protect ourselves.
Yeah, my dad was in a facility like that, you know.
Right.
At the end,
so what we can do, what SB 911 does three things. Number one, it requires more training of staff at these facilities. Right now, if you take your elderly father to or mother to get a facial, it's required that the person who does the facial has 600 hours of training. If you take them to a manicure, the manicurist needs to have 400 hours of training. But the people that care for them day to day in these residential facilities need 10 hours of training.
Mm-hmm.
Which is astounding. So 911, one thing it does is requires more training for various professionals and staff in these facilities and continuing education. Second thing it does is if a facility takes on people with particularly severe illnesses or health problems.
Alzheimer's
is one. They need to hire staff who have a special training in those areas. Right now they don't. Right now the same staff that handles patients who are fairly self-sufficient also handle those with severe problems. So staffing will change. And the third thing 911 does, and the way it got its name, we were told in the Union Tribune series that there were times when workers wanted to call 911 because they saw emergent situations in these care facilities, but they were afraid they'd get fired if they did. A word is out in a lot of facilities that if you call in outside authorities, including 911, your job could be in jeopardy.
So your bill protects the whistleblowers in these facilities?
It's a whistleblower protection for staff in these facilities. So we think all three of those things will help to get better service for our elderly.
Now, has that bill actually been introduced yet? And if so, what's the status of it?
Yeah, just a couple of weeks ago, 911 was introduced. Mm-hmm. And status is it's just starting its way through the process as well. Normally, our process begins in February and works its way through September, and then bills go to the governor's desk. So everything is early right now. The one bill I mentioned earlier on human trafficking as a gang crime, that bill worked its way through the system last year. We just left it in the assembly instead of bringing it to the governor because we were afraid he wouldn't sign it because of the prison overcrowding. But now with the relief we've gotten, we'll move that immediately to the governor.
Very good. Well, Marty, I want to thank you so much for coming down and joining us today on the East County Magazine show on KNSJ. And we look forward to hearing more from you on these issues in the future.
Well, glad to be with you, Miriam, and glad to be able to chat with your listeners.
Very good. Thank you.
La Mesa residents may soon be able to raise chickens, though not roosters, in their backyards. The Planning Commission voted unanimously to allow one chicken for each 2,000 square feet or three chickens for the average 6,000-foot residential lot. The proposed new ordinance must next be approved by the City Council, which is expected to hear the measure on March 25th. Patrick Dean, a chef who previously ran for a council seat, has been a longtime advocate of legalizing chicken ownership. However, the plucky chef plans to ask council to increase the number of chickens that can be raised, noting that chickens are social animals that are best off in larger groups. Birds of a feather, it seems, do long to flock together. Dean also aims to ask that residents who live in a business district be allowed to keep chickens. While support for chicken ownership has grown in the community and several other local cities, including Santee, El Cajon, and San Diego, have recently changed laws to allow ownership of hens, one resident voiced opposition, raising concerns over flies and odor. La Mesa's proposed ordinance would require homeowners to keep chicken coops and yards clean, allowing enforcement action if the rule is violated. This is Leon Thompson reporting for East County Magazine.
This is Miriam Raftery with some East County education updates. The Grossmont Union High School District Board took a step backward for democracy at its recent meeting. By a vote of 4-1, the board adopted a resolution that, while praising the district's bond oversight committee, also aimed to muzzle school board members from giving testimony to that oversight committee. The board resolution came after board member Priscilla Schreiber testified to the oversight committee, encouraging its members to review a grand jury report on the district's handling of bond monies related to a proposed Alpine High School. She also has voiced concern about the committee not having all the facts, information, and differing perspectives needed for historical understanding of these issues. Schreiber has said that she is extremely disappointed that the board leadership would employ such tactics. The resolution was the first mention that there were any concerns arising out of her visit to the Oversight Committee, and she views this as an effort to try to silence her. Now, the board did amend its original resolution, but only after East County Magazine got a legal opinion from Californians Aware General Counsel Terry Frank, who advised us that the resolution was legally unenforceable, violating both First Amendment rights and California state law. After our story ran, the board introduced a revised resolution that asked its individual board members to voluntarily refrain from attending Citizens Bond oversight meetings unless they were specifically invited by the chair. But Schreiber has contended that the chair has withheld information that she believes the committee needs to hear. Now, the Grossmont Board President Robert Shields claims the intent of the language was just to affirm and emphasize to the Bond Oversight Committee that they're supposed to act independently and without undue influence of board members. He said, "Some members have come to the erroneous conclusion that when board members attend their meeting, it somehow communicates for the board and carries more weight than a regular citizen." But Schreiber, who often disagrees with the rest of the board members, said the revised language was directed at her and amounts to a gag order. The Citizens Bond Oversight Committee only sought information from the district, she said, adding that without information from additional sources, this in no way serves the purpose as an independent oversight committee. Now, specifically, the committee members were never led into discussion of the grand jury report from last May, which reprimanded the district for not addressing the Alpine issue. At its February 13th meeting after Schreiber spoke, Liz Higgins, who's the vice chairperson of the Oversight Committee, said its members will be picking up discussion of the grand jury report in future meetings. Michael Waterman, a longtime attorney, stated at the Grossmont District's board meeting that by adopting the resolution, the board has the potential to be sued for civil rights violations with possible ACLU involvement. Schreiber was the only board member who voted against the resolution. Now, as background, voters passed two propositions, Prop H and Prop U, back in 2004 and 2008, to fund repairs of aging schools in the district and build a high school for the citizens of Alpine and Blossom Valley. That school was supposed to open by 2013, but as of today, there's only vacant land, even after eminent domain was declared and residents of the property were evicted. In May of last year, the grand jury issued a report addressing the district's lack of progress and questioning its intent to build the school. That report, titled Grossmont Union High School District, Fool Us Once, Fool Us Twice, blasted the district for repeatedly axing plans to build the 12th high school in Alpine. The report directed the district to declare unconditionally by December 31st of last year if they are or are not going to build the 12th high school using the bond funds, and that if the district opts to build the high school, it should pass a formal resolution in support, including a credible timeline and a construction start date, and put funds in escrow to assure that work will be done. Further, the grand jury said if the district decided not to build the high school by the end of last year, it needed to cooperate with the Alpine Union School District in support of the ongoing Alpine community effort to become a unified school district, K through 12, and let the Alpine Union School District instead build the high school. But instead, in late December, the district offered a vague response, stating only that it is the intent of the Grossmont Union High School District Board of Trustees to give serious consideration to construct the 12th high school. Now, at the recent board meeting, board members also weighed in on amending the list of projects being funded by the bond monies from those propositions. Michael Waterman, the attorney, spoke out and urged the district to put on hold proposed construction projects at current high schools in order to instead fund the Alpine High School. Two of the major projects are ill-advised, he said, as they would take half of what is needed to fund Alpine. We paid for this school, he said. Now, the board has already drawn criticism for using some bond monies to fund projects that weren't even included in the bonds, such as a new performing arts center for Helix and swimming pools at other campuses. Board member Jim Steringer said that discussing the Alpine School, however, was a moot point because it would require three votes from the board. We are ignoring the elephant in the room, said Steringer. The question of Alpine is a political question. It requires three votes of the board, which do not exist. We must face reality. And he added that unless one of his colleagues on the board would change his mind, that school is not going to be built. Alpine parents agree with that assessment, and now a citizens group in Alpine has submitted final signatures to the County Office of Education for unification of the Alpine Union School District. Their goal is to expand that district to include high school students. Therefore, they would leave the Grossmont District and build their own high school. If successful, a settlement would then need to be reached with the Grossmont District for funds earmarked for that high school, and that will mean property tax revenues and state funding for student attendance will flow to the Alpine District, not the Grossmont District. New funding could come as welcome relief for the ailing Alpine District, where teachers are currently on strike in protest of steep salary cuts made by the financially strapped district. Teachers want to see cuts in administrative staff first before they are asked to take pay cuts so steep that some say their homes and futures could be at risk.
On Thursday, February 20th, 90 teachers at the Alpine Unified School District walked off the job in an unfair labor practice strike. At heart is what the district is offering, including cuts in salaries and benefits, as well as the loss of positions. Because of the situation, a state fact finder found that indeed there were issues with the school system and its financial health. The fact finder offered as part of its package a reduction in personnel. According to school superintendent Tom Pellegrino,
fact-finding report that came out that said if teachers take 4.73, a little over 4.5% reduction in salary, and a $12,000 health benefits cap, that and lay off 10 teachers at an $800,000 savings, that the district will be in a better financial position. Not completely stabilized and not deficit spending, but a better financial position. And all those things are true. We would be in a better financial position. The problem is teachers are applying the 4 points. They're saying we want the 4.73, but we don't want it to move on. We just want it this year. And we want a $12,000 cap, but don't lay off teachers. Don't do the lion's share of the savings of what the fact finder's report was. The 4.73 saves about $300,000 to $350,000. The layoff of 10 teachers saves $800,000.
While he agrees with the teachers that the fact finder report could be part of the solution, Gail Malone, president of the union, told East County Magazine that
the fact finder said adjust personnel. He did not say 10 teachers. And how that got to be published like that, I don't know. And that is the problem that I have, because I know personnel can be adjusted because of retirements and all these things that go on, people taking leaves of absence, and there could be reduction made to personnel. Not necessarily 10, but pretty close to that.
Malone also pointed out another serious problem with the school district and why changes have to happen regardless.
Enrollment's down 10%, teachers are down 20%, and we have more district personnel with less students than ever.
Both management and the union sat back down on Saturday, February 22nd, to try to hammer out an agreement that will be agreeable to the teachers and the administration. Also, during the Thursday meeting, the teachers had overwhelming support from the community they served. This is Nadine Abbott for East County Magazine and KNSJ Radio.
Almost a million people go missing in the United States a year. Many are found, but there are just as many that are not, and over time, they are forgotten by all, except for their family and friends who struggle to keep the voice of their missing heard. But now, they no longer stand alone as we hear their cry, and we will join them and reach out through the airways to become one voice. This is Jerry Dean from Missing Persons of America. Sheriff deputies at the Rancho San Diego station asked public help to locate Henry Camarena, 38. He has not been seen or heard from by family or friends since Sunday, February 16th. Camarena has health issues and requires daily medication, said Detective Moore. He may be driving a white 2013 Nissan Versa with California license plate 6ZAF275. Camarena is Hispanic, 5 feet 7 inches tall, and weighs 180 pounds, with brown hair and brown eyes. If you see him, call the Sheriff's Department at 858-565-5200.
This is Leon Thompson for East County Magazine and KNSJ Radio. More than 100 officers from law enforcement agencies and the Metropolitan Transit System patrolled known hotspots for drug-related crimes in Santee, Lakeside, El Cajon, and La Mesa, and the trolley line that connects each of these communities. 26 young adults were arrested during a day-long sweep focused on methamphetamine-related crimes in the East County. According to the County of San Diego Methamphetamine Strike Force, the recent arrests marked only the second time offenders aged 18 to 24 were the focus of a law enforcement operation. The sweep operation tipped the scale, focused on young offenders in an effort to intervene while early with offenders who often turn to crime to support their drug addiction. For us, that's a critical population, said probation officer Jason Druxman. Of the 26 arrests, 10 were taken into custody on suspicion of felonies and 16 for misdemeanors, authorities said, noting two people were taken directly to drug treatment facilities instead of jails. More and more counties are taking young offenders directly to inpatient treatment programs. This week's arrest came just one day after the county released the latest meth report card, which found that 2012 was the second worst for meth-related deaths in the San Diego area since record-keeping started in 1995. The county said 217 meth-related deaths were recorded in 2012, second only to 2005's tally of 245 people. The county hotline for residents to report meth-related crimes or to seek information about treatment options is 877-NO-2-METH or 877-662-6384.
The East County Magazine Show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interests, not special interests. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso.
This is a public service announcement from East County Magazine. The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts provide important information about much more than wildfires. In these winter months, you can receive free alerts via email or Twitter on your mobile phone
about emergencies such as flash floods, road closures, heavy snow, and other severe weather alerts, as well as wildfires, traffic reports, and more. You can sign up for this free public service at www.eastcountymagazine.org. The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are produced by East County Magazine with support from the Viejas Band of the Kumeyaay Indians. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at the San Diego Performance Academy. Today, I am delighted to welcome the winners of last year's San Diego Music Awards for Best Blues Band, the Bayou Brothers, with a sound straight out of Louisiana's dance clubs, blues festivals, and backyard crawfish boils. The Bayou Brothers are known for their rollicking, foot-stomping, musical gumbo style. Features a blend of, as you can hear, accordions, keyboards, guitar, bass, drums, and rubboard, all with three-part harmonies. The band performs Zydeco, R&B, and blues music in the tradition of New Orleans Mardi Gras festivities. They played for some of San Diego's biggest music festivals, including Gator by the Bay and the San Diego Blues Festival. And next, they'll be performing at our very own East County Magazine Mardi Gras party on Wednesday, March 12th at Pinnacle Peak in Santee. Now, Rick Lee founded the Bayou Brothers back in 1996. So, Rick and everyone, welcome to the show.
Welcome.
Okay.
Thank you.
Rick, can you start out by introducing yourself? Tell us what you play, where you're from, and then we'll let each of the band members do the same.
My name is Rick Lee. I play drums, and I'm from Coronado, California.
My name is Sister Judy, and I play the Zydeco rubboard, and I live in Mount Helix.
All right.
I'm John. I'm on the accordion, and I live down in Imperial Beach.
I'm Jack Stevens. I play guitar, and I'm living in El Cajon, and I'm from Kansas City, Missouri.
I'm Danny Perez, bassist for the Bayou Brothers out of Santee, California.
All right, right here in Santee, yeah, where our Mardi Gras is going to be. Now, can you start out, Rick, by telling us how you got this whole thing started? Are you from the South, from New Orleans, or what got you interested in this kind of music?
Well, all of us had toured through the South and picked up the flavor of Zydeco music in Louisiana. And John and I go way back to high school, John Chambers and I, and we founded the band back in, about 1996. And we just started the band as just a side project for fun. And we played Sister Judy's housewarming party. We started at a backyard party way back when. And I can't believe it, but that one gig turned to 2 to 4 to 8 to 100. We played thousands of shows.
I was at that party. Judy happens to be a neighbor of mine, and I had no idea that was where you got your start.
It's full circle now. Judy is our rubboard player now. And so anyway, we're just having a great time, and the band's been very successful to this point.
Great. Can you tell us what Zydeco music is for listeners who may not know?
Zydeco music is kind of a mixture of Cajun and soul and a little bit of blues. It's picked up a little bit, and they have several dances that they do. Zydeco, the term actually is pick it up a notch or put a little more salt in the snap beats.
I like that. Which I know means. I heard Rick describe it earlier as Louisiana party music. So,
and it primarily a lot of accordion, which is traditional in Zydeco music. And
yeah, for those that think of accordion as, you know, Lawrence Welk or something, this is really radically different.
Not in Zydeco. No,
it's very exciting music.
We don't do any polkas in Zydeco, no. Yep. And we also add the rubboard.
Judy, play a little something on that rub board. Let people hear what that sounds like.
Sure. Here we go.
All right. Very nice. Now, I know that you're known for getting the audience involved, too. Tell us how that works, Judy.
Well, that's a little bit of my role as the rubboard player, because rubboard is an instrument that pretty much anybody can pick it up and make some noise with it, and it brings out a really fun side of people. Everybody gets a smile on their face when they put a rubboard over their shoulders, so always bring an extra one or two and get the audience up.
In the audience, watch out. You might get to get up and play with the band.
We've had some big people play Rubboard with our band. We've had the mayor of San Diego. We've had the mayor of Gloucester, England,
when we
were touring in England.
Wow. Yeah, you've done a lot of traveling. Where are some of the other places that you've played, Rick?
We've done some fun gigs in Laughlin, Vegas. And the most fun was touring the UK twice. And the second time we brought this blues legend, Lazy Lester, with us, who wrote a lot of the blues hits. He's a blues Hall of Famer. We've been all over California, Nevada, Arizona. But we love playing here at home.
Speaking of here at home, we've got the two newest members of the band here, Danny and Jack from Santee and El Cajon. How did you guys get involved with all of this?
Well, I actually was... I was playing a job with a different band, and when we finished our show, I was loading my gear up, and John, an old friend of mine that I've known since about 1969, he approached me and said, "Hey, what's going on?" And I found out that their band, the Bayou Brothers, were following my group that I was with, and happened that their guitar player was on tour in Europe doing a blues show. Blues thing. He does this every year.
He's a very
well-known blues guitar player in town. And John said, "Hey, you know, why don't you come fill in with us? You know, play some gigs with us because we need guitar player." So that's what I did. I went and played with them and did a few gigs. And next thing I know, I was officially a Bayou Brother.
Fantastic.
So it's worked out well.
Yeah. I was invited to a gig to come in and participate as a substitute for one of the gentlemen that were there before me, and immediately I realized the musicianship was top-notch, and the music was infectious. It was just like, wow, I love this. And in a little due process, I came in to kind of be a full-time member as well, and I'm loving every minute of it.
Excellent.
Yes.
Well, it certainly is toe-tapping, lively music.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Rick, you guys write some of your own original songs as well as performing traditional music and songs written by other people. Tell us a little bit about your style and how it's evolving.
Well, a lot of songwriters like us, you take real events. Like one of my favorite new songs is Don Don's Barbecue. And we used to play this casino in Yuma, the Paradise Casino. And one of the fellas that worked there in the kitchen, Don Don, had a rib joint out there in Yuma, and he would invite us to come over, and he just had the best ribs and potato salad. And so John here wrote a song, Don Don's Barbecue, about Don Don. He's a real person, and that's where a lot of the best material comes from, is a real life experience.
Very good.
And now we're going to play a little excerpt from one of your original pieces, Zydeco Shoes.
Well, I'm ready to put on my dancing shoes and get on out there on the dance floor.
Another one of your original pieces is Cajun Casserole, and this one's got a little bit of four-part harmony going.
Cajun casserole.
That is fantastic.
It's
Thank
hot.
You. Now let's hear a little bit more about some of your music and some of the songs you might be playing at our Mardi Gras party. March 12th, and that's from 6 to 10 out at Pinnacle Peak in Santee. And the proceeds of that event, by the way, are all to benefit our reporting for East County Magazine for our show right here on KNSJ, which is nonprofit public radio. And you can get the ticket details at eastcountymagazine.org or by emailing editor@eastcountymagazine.org. They also will be on sale at Pinnacle Peak. So, Rick, can you tell us a little bit about some of the songs that we're going to be hearing?
We do some traditional Cajun and Zydeco. Jambalaya is one song that is one of my personal favorites. We have Gonna Party.
Gonna Party Till They Turn Out the Lights?
Yeah, Gonna Party Till They Turn Out the Lights. That's another favorite of mine. High Roller Zydeco is a really high-energy Zydeco tune. It's a really hip tune. It's one of my favorites. It's got great vocals, a really good hook, and a great beat.
Very cool. Then we've got one called Cupid's Shuffle.
Cupid's Shuffle has been something that has been successful, I think, at just about every show we play. Judy gets out there and gets the audience going, and there's a line dance that goes along with it, the Cupid Shuffle.
Ooh, that sounds fun.
It's got, again, that infectious groove, R&B kind of funkier with accordion on top and Jack strumming a funky guitar. It's just fun.
Nice. And how about Ramblin' Man?
Well, Ramblin' Man is it's an old cover by the Allman Brothers, which they're a Southern rock band. But it's actually considered Zydeco also, and it's like a crossover, you would say. And it's just a great, great song that everybody can identify with. It just seems to always get the crowd. Every show we play, the crowd just loves it. And, of course, it lets me show off a little bit because it features a lot of guitar soloing on it, and so it's a lot of fun.
Another one, the name alone sounds pretty fiery, Hot Chili Mama.
Hot Chili Mama, yes, well, that kind of sums it up right there.
Now, I understand there's an interesting story behind one of your original songs that came about and was inspired by an incident that happened when you were playing at the San Diego Zoo. Rick, tell us what happened at the zoo.
We were playing the San Diego Zoo Wine Festival this last year, and as we're playing, one of the zookeepers came and said, "Have you guys looked behind you? There's something going on behind us." Well, it was a baby rhino that was actually dancing to our music.
Wow.
So we peeked behind the stage, and sure enough, there he was, just dancing away.
Doug the Zydeco.
To the Zydeco music. So John penned a song that we're currently going to put on our next CD called Zydeco Rhino.
Zydeco Rhino. Well, there you go. You heard about it here first.
Zydeco Rhino. We've got kind of a jungle beat going on with the Zydeco music, so.
All right. And what's the album going to be called?
Zydeco Rhino.
Zydeco Rhino. Okay.
It
awesome.
Would be great with the picture on it. Yeah.
So we're all looking forward to the big party and hearing everybody in action out there. Put on your dancing shoes, listeners, and if you want tickets, you can get them online at eastcountymagazine.org. Where can people find out more about the Bayou Brothers, Rick?
Well, we have a website, bayoubrothers.net, and we do have a fan club run by Sister Judy. And also, one fun aspect of our website, we have Sister Judy's Rubboard Club. If you get up and you play rubboard with us, we'll take your picture and we'll put it on the Rubboard Club.
Wow.
And you'll be a member of Sister Judy's Rubboard Club.
Well, there you go. We are looking forward to that. Let's have a big round of applause here for the Bayou Brothers.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This week, the U.S. Supreme Court is hearing arguments in a case that could determine whether or not the Environmental Protection Agency has the right to regulate greenhouse gas pollutants emitted by coal-fired power plants, oil refineries, and chemical plants. The EPA has argued that it has a right under the Clean Air Act to regulate gases that endanger public health or welfare, and that includes greenhouse gases. The agency calls the emission threshold sensible and says the rules focused only on the biggest polluters while shielding smaller industrial facilities and businesses from having to obtain greenhouse gas permits. The Environmental Defense Fund says that a ruling against the EPA by the Supreme Court would be a big mistake, letting the biggest polluters evade enforcement actions. But a brief filed by House Republicans argues that the regulations are an abuse of power, bypassing Congress with unprecedented regulatory controls on industry. The Obama administration has renewed its call recently for major actions to combat climate change. Secretary of State John Kerry has called climate change a weapon of mass destruction that must not be ignored, and he indicated that climate change will be a key point in future diplomatic talks with foreign leaders. But meanwhile, here in the U.S., congressional leaders remain split on the issue by a heated partisan divide. Reporting for East County Magazine and KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is Ed Barena for East County Magazine and KNSJ with some important safety tips. On average, 20,000 deaths and 21 million medical visits occur annually, Fire Chief Sam DiGiovanna reminds us. Firefighters and paramedics respond to thousands of accidents every day, he says. Chief DiGiovanna, author of the Chief's Corner column on East County Magazine, offers these tips to help prevent accidents in your home. In the bathroom, cleaners should be locked away, out of the reach of children. Medications, scissors, razor blades, and cleaning supplies should be kept in a locked cabinet or out of the reach of children and pets. Non-skid stickers in the tub and shower can prevent slips and falls. Children should not be left unattended in or around the pool. Pool areas should be fenced in with a gate secured with a child-proof safety lock or latch. Electrical safety. Children can stick objects in open sockets and get hurt. Unused electrical outlets must have safety plugs to prevent accidental electrocution from foreign objects being put in the socket. Every home should have a fire extinguisher. Smoke and carbon monoxide detectors should be on each floor of the home and tested monthly. Batteries should be changed at least every 6 months or as necessary. A working fire extinguisher must be accessible. Keep paper towels, plastic plates, plastic utensils, and anything other than cooking equipment away from the stove. These items can easily start a fire if left too close to the range. Keep pesticides and cleaners away from children. Store chemicals in a locked cabinet or keep on a high shelf that children cannot reach. Do not spray bug spray or pesticides near a child's toys, since toys tend to go into a child's mouth. In addition, never leave household chemicals unattended. Unfortunately, small children may try to open the products and drink the contents.
The income tax filing deadline is now less than 2 months away, but it can be less taxing for those 60 and older. AARP's tax aid program helps middle and lower income older Californians prepare basic federal and state income tax returns for free. Sheree Gillens with AARP California says they have 3,000 volunteer tax preparers ready to help at hundreds of sites across California.
They're there to walk the taxpayer through the various questions that they have and to, you know, get some money back into their hands.
The program was started in 1968. Gillen says last year they helped Californians secure $92 million in income tax refunds. While the program is catered to those 60 and older, it's open to everyone, and AARP membership is not required.
They're trained on the type of tax questions that come from AARP members and retirees. Sometimes there's new provisions and forms that are relevant to them, or sometimes there's a spouse who doesn't know how to proceed because, you know, their spouse is gone.
Gillen says walk-ins are welcome, but appointments are encouraged.
They can go to aarp.org/findtaxhelp, or they can call 888-227-7669. Either of those places will help you locate a site in your community. There's over 465 sites in California alone.
It's important to bring all of your tax documents, including last year's tax returns, Social Security cards, or other official documentation for yourself and your dependents. For Public News Service, I'm Lori Abbott.
This is Miriam Raftery with this week's weather forecast from the National Weather Service. It's good news for our drought-stricken regions, since the prediction this week includes rain. The weather is forecast to cool down with a chance of precipitation on Wednesday night and Thursday morning. By Friday night and Saturday, a deep low-pressure system is expected to move into our region, bringing strong winds, cool temperatures, and moderate to heavy rainfall. That's good news for farmers and residents across San Diego County, which is currently under a Stage 1 drought watch.
This is Rebecca Williamson running up the wildest jobs in East County. Now here's the buzz. Beekeeping is making a comeback here. Honey was once one of the top crops in East County. In the 1800s, local honey was shipped to Europe, where it was prized for its flavor and health benefits. Recently, bees have been disappearing across the United States. No one is sure why. Theories range from pesticides to genetically modified crops to global warming. But now, some determined folks are working to help bring back our bees. Today, we're here with Dragon Djuric with Bee Happy. He's going to help us all about the bee revival in our region. Dragon, what are some of the benefits that bees bring to us?
Well, the human development of planet Earth, the way that we know it, it wouldn't be possible without the bees. And that's because the bees are the one that pollinize the flowers and the trees that we have, the fruits, all the crops that we harvest every year. So the flowers, the reason that the flowers grow, one is for the beauty, for us to enjoy it, and the second part is to attract the pollinators. So this is the main reason, the pollinization of the flowers, and the second part is what the bees produce, and that is honey, pollen, royal jelly, propolis, and wax.
That is a benefit. And how difficult is it to raise bees?
Well, it's not difficult at all if you know what you're doing, if you have the proper equipment, and if you're willing to learn.
Are local laws changing to make it easier to become a beekeeper?
Yes. In 2012, San Diego just passed a new law where you're allowed to have two beehives in the city of San Diego.
Can you tell us how to raise bees in East County?
In the city of San Diego has the easiest rules, and that's 15 feet from your neighbor. But if you live in different communities like El Cajon, La Mesa, Escondido, they all have different regulations, and the best way is to go and contact the city of one of these, Escondido or El Cajon or East County, wherever you live, and they will give you the information on the beekeeping and how far the beehives need to be from your neighbors.
What if someone has bees they don't want in their attic, for example?
This is not the place where you would want, and anybody would want, the bees in the attic, so those bees need to be removed.
And how can people get bees removed?
Well, the bee removal, it's a complex situation. My company removes the bees alive, and that's the goal here. We're educating people about the importance of the bees and why is it important to remove them alive and not kill them. So it's a complex process where the honeycomb and the total family needs to be removed and requeened. And that is because of the Africanized bees. The problem with the aggressive bees, you don't want to have aggressive bees in your neighborhood, and you should be careful dealing with the aggressive bees.
Can this job be dangerous? Are you worried about Africanized killer bees that have made their way into our region?
Well, the job is dangerous only if you present a danger to the bees. The bees are very docile creatures, and they will not attack you unless they are threatened or you go and you mess with them. So yes, you should not play with the bees, and you should not go and disturb them.
Where can people buy locally made honey?
The best place to buy honey, and you should know your source of honey, because there is a lot of honey that comes from different parts of the world where they fake the honey. They mix the honey with the syrups and all kinds of additives. So the best place to buy honey is from your local beekeeper. Farmers markets are the best places. Or beekeepers like me, we sell honey and royal jelly and bee pollen and other bee products.
Where can people get more information?
More information you can find at the San Diego Beekeeper Society. We have a large group of members. There's about more than 700 members. And you can come and listen to different topics. There's different people that come about different things. There's local beekeepers or website. That's also another good way to learn about bees. So for more information, you can go to sandiegobeekeepersociety.com.
This is Ed Barena reporting for KNSJ and East County Magazine. Residents of San Diego County are being asked to report any calls they receive from someone claiming to be a peace officer and subsequently asking for cash payment, the Sheriff's Department announced this week. According to the department, several residents have reported suspicious phone calls by a man who says he's a member of the Sheriff's Department, then states that the person answering the phone, or a member of the family, has an outstanding warrant for their arrest. He then asks for cash payment in order to avoid arrest. Sheriff Bill Gore is reminding residents that the Sheriff's Department will never call anyone seeking payment for outstanding arrest warrants. If you received a call similar to the one described above, authorities are asking you to report it to the Sheriff's Department or your local police agency. Think you may have information on this case? You can leave an anonymous tip by calling the Sheriff's Department at 858-565-5200 or call Crime Stoppers at 888-580-8477 and be eligible for a $1,000 reward for information leading to an arrest.
This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the San Diego Performance Academy for the use of their studio, to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Donnie Gentile, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jules, Brian Boykel, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, and Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road. We also thank the County of San Diego for a community enhancement grant to support our Destination East County segment. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.